A carnivore diet refers to the consumption of animal-based foods. People who follow a carnivorous dietary pattern eat almost exclusively only meat and other animal-based foods. And you're about to learn everything about it. Welcome to Carnivore Today. All things carnivore, ketogenic living, and metabolic health. If you're looking to shed those extra pounds, reduce your dependency on prescriptions, or even heal metabolic disorders, we've got you covered. It's all about the latest research, success stories, and we'll give you practical tips to help you thrive on your wellness journey. And we're also here to quell some misconceptions about it.
What about fiber? Won't I explode without eating fiber?
Fiber is not necessary.
I'll get fat eating all that fat.
No, you will not.
I'm not going to have any energy because no carbs.
You'll have more.
I'm going to have a heart attack from eating all that red meat.
False.
Carnivore Today, where your health journey begins. Now your host, Adam Lacy.
Hi there, folks. Today we're with Rick Rodriguez, and he is also known as the 40-plus year carnivore. So I thank you, Rick, for being with us today. How are you doing?
I'm doing pretty good. Things are looking up around here.
Awesome. I love that. So for those of us that don't know, can you kind of share a little bit about yourself?
Well, I'm sure a lot of people have already seen my story. As you mentioned, I'm known as the 40-year carnivore, although technically I did have a seven-month vegetarian vegan period, but I did start in August of 1983, and I did it as basically a form of protest. I still live where I was born, which is in Miami, Florida, and in terms of, you know, the diet, it was basically just something to go against the trend at the time. It was never anything for any kind of health. I didn't really have any health problems other than being short, being picked on all the time. But other than that, it was just a matter of I wanted to do things my own way, and it kind of all went together.
Oh, that's awesome. So you say you've been carnivore for over 40 years. You know, what was your initial inspiration for starting a carnivore diet?
It actually went with several things at once. What it started out was, is I was one of those kids that was kind of frustrated, got picked on a lot because I was short and skinny. And every time that I tried to do something to try to be like everyone else, I always failed. If I tried to follow whatever the trend was, I got laughed at because obviously I wasn't from a rich family. So when you're trying to compete with the kids that had all the latest toys, that's not going to work. And then you're not extremely good looking. You don't have great physique or anything like that. You know, you're just some silly kid. So it came down to, well, what can I do that I would like that would actually be different? So instead of trying to keep up with everybody to follow along with them, I decided, let me just do my own thing and see what it is. And really at the time, I had been raised when those breakfast cereals, which I call duck food, were really popular. Every time you turn on the cartoons, you'd hear, you know, one of those commercials for Post Sugar Crisp or Special K or one of these other, basically just bird food. They call the cereal. And it was just something that I didn't like. So I thought, you know, my parents gave me oatmeal and they gave me vitamins and they gave me all kinds of wheat germ and stuff like that. And the only thing I really liked about breakfast was eggs. So I thought, oh, you know, a breakfast of eggs and, of course, steak and eggs, bacon and eggs and all those things. That was really bad. Same thing with using butter. My mom used to use margarine or vegetable oil for cooking. And I thought, well, what else could I use? Oh, lard, fat. The more fat, the better. And as you know, in the 1980s, everything was about low fat, low fat, low fat, complex carbohydrates, whole grains. And my dad was into health food, and every time that he gave me something that was healthy, it tasted bad. So I always had the idea that in order for food to be healthy, it had to taste really bad. It had to taste like something that you cut from your yard and you were going to throw away, like grass or bushes or something like that. I thought, you know what? That's just not good. Why would I want to eat something that tastes disgusting? And many different things that my parents would give me, I hated. And actually, I was one of the kids that hated sweets. So while many kids would see candy or cookies as a treat, I saw it as almost like a punishment. And really, when it came down to it, my favorite food was meat. I always liked meat. It was sort of a built-in taste. I love the taste of beef. I love the taste of deep-fried chicken. I like seafood. I like eggs. I like dairy. I like all these things. So really what it was, when I reached the point where I wanted to rebel, like a lot of teenagers do, and, you know, in the 80s, I mean, you remember the 80s, oh, 70s yeah. and 80s, they had that whole designer culture and the yuppies and, you know, sort of a grunge culture, whatever. I thought, you know, what could I do that would set me apart from everybody else? Because they're going to make fun of me anyway. I don't care at that point. And then that was also the summer I had broken my arm falling through the roof. And I was regretting the idea of going to high school. I thought, you know, what's the worst thing that could happen? Maybe I'd get really sick. Maybe I'd have a heart attack and then I wouldn't have to go to school. I could just stay home. So I thought it all just kind of came together. So I came up with a style. I wanted to look like somebody from the late 50s or early 60s, as square as possible. And I listened to elevator music while everybody else was listening to Michael Jackson. And the other thing was, of course, the diet. You know, what could I eat that would go against the trend? Well, if fat-free and whole grains was a trend, then lots of meat, lots of fat, and butter and lard and all the things that are unhealthy, that's what I would do. And if I got a heart attack, hey, that just added to the benefits. So it was all part of a rebellion. That's it. You know, I wasn't going to do what the other kids were doing, smoking or drinking. I hate the taste of alcohol, and I think cigarettes are disgusting, just like coffee. I can't stand coffee. It smells like, you know, when you overcook your meat, like let's say you're stewing some beef and then you fall asleep, or you're working and it catches fire and it's black. It smells nasty when you clean out the pan. That's what coffee reminds me of. And cigarettes, they're sickening, you know, nasty ashtrays, and all these people look stupid sucking on them little sticks. It just is ridiculous. But I thought, hey, I could come up with my own style. And believe me, it was great because it was a look that I liked. It was food that I liked. And I was actually quite happy. And getting a heart attack, that sounded like fun. So, hey, that's how it started.
That's awesome. It's funny that you bring up the burnt food analogy. I do a similar analogy when people talk about tea. I can't stand drinking tea. It's the grossest thing on the planet to me. It's like taking sticks and leaves and throwing it in water and drinking that water. Or you know, I always say I'd rather take the ashes from an ashtray and mix some water in it and drink that before I drink some tea. I mean, it's just the most distinct thing I've ever.
I don't blame you. For me, tea was a medicine. A lot of times when I'd get sick, get the flu or something, or I got a stomach problem, my mom would give me chamomile tea. And I did get stomach problems quite often when I was a kid. And if I got sick, usually the first thing I would get would either be a sore throat or a really bad stomach issue and diarrhea and gas and all these things. So I'm quite familiar with tea. And to me, it's like a medicine, and it was just terrible. I used to hate it. You know, another medicine my parents would give me was honey, which I absolutely hate. And every time that I had a sore throat or cold, oh, here's some honey. And it seemed to make it worse. It didn't make it any better. I used to get ear infections, and they would put like some kind of oil, I forget, fish oil in there. And that actually worked. And by the way, cod liver oil was one of the things that they gave me as a supplement that I really enjoyed. I always liked cod liver oil. My mom would go, ew, how disgusting. And people would look at me like I'm crazy. And I practically loved this stuff. And they just, what a strange kid. You know, why would he like that? But like you said, coffee and tea are just nasty. And I know a lot of people, to them, it's a treat. I mean, there's a Starbucks not that far away from here, and you see people lining up to drink that nasty stuff. They even go to the McDiarrhea, to the McCafe, and drink coffee there. And there's also a Dunkin' Donuts not that far from here, and they seem to have a lot of coffee. But the other thing is, when I was in school, I got in trouble a lot, and I always associated the smell of coffee with the principal's office. Because every time we went in the principal's office, it smelled like coffee. So I thought, oh, you know, that smell. Teacher's lounge was another one. That was always coffee and cigarettes.
Right.
When you walk by the teacher's lounge, that was another place I didn't like. So I guess it all kind of went together. But when I smelled meat, it was usually the barbecue place. Or it might be, you know, the Sweet 'n House smorgasbord or something like that. You smell the fried chicken and the, you know, the steak, the roast beef, the meatballs. I can still, to this day, my mouth waters when I think about the Swedish meatballs and the roast beef and the fried chicken and the frog legs and the shrimp that they had. And this was back in the 1970s. So, and I can still remember that. And that's the other thing. The Sweetenhouse Smorgasbord, it had sort of that 60s look to it. And they had elevator music and good food. So that may be one of the reasons why I like that stuff so much.
That's awesome. So thinking back to when you were younger and you decided to rebel, so was it more of a gradual transition or just light switch and whichever one it was there any challenges that you faced with switching to basically all animal-based?
It was, at first, I guess it was kind of gradual because we were a poor family. We didn't have a lot of money. So a lot of times we would eat out at a buffet. And back then they were real popular. We had a Chinese buffet, which was called the Chinese Food Cart. And then we had the Sweetenhouse Smorgasbord. There was another one called Duff's Buffet. Whenever we went to the buffet, what I would do, I would go for the foods that I like. And those would tend to be meat. So, for example, I remember at the Duff's Smorgasbord, they used to have spaghetti and meatballs. Well, what I would do, I would pick out all the meatballs and not eat any spaghetti. And the same thing, they had some other kind of pasta and it had like seafood and meat and I'd pick it out. We go to the Chinese Food Garden, they'd have like broccoli and beef. I'd pick out all the little bits of beef and I got criticized for being picky. Well, you're a picky kid. No wonder you're so skinny and you're so little. You need to eat rice and beans and vegetables if you want to get big and strong. And I thought, okay, but every time I tried to eat vegetables, they were so disgusting. It was hard for me to eat them. Beans are the worst because, you know, I live in Miami, has a very high Cuban culture, Latin, Hispanic, whatever you want to call it. Mm-hmm. And they all have rice and beans. And of course, arroz con pollo, you know, when they have chicken, it's always with rice, but their chicken is absolutely disgusting. I couldn't eat that stuff. It's slimy, it's nasty. And I always remember whenever we went to one of our friends that were Cuban, the food was inedible. There was nothing that I could eat. So I would seek out. Now, the one thing that Cubans are good at cooking is puerco, pork. And let me tell you, some of the pork they cook was so good. So every time that we go to one of our Cuban friends, I'd get the pork and I'd gobble that up. The chicken I wouldn't touch because it was always nasty and I hate rice. So, you know, but I would choose the meat, but I wasn't on a carnivore diet.
Right.
But when I had that accident and I fell through the roof and both of my parents were working at the time, it came down to, well, I'm stuck at home. My parents are not there to cook for me except for dinner. So I decided, well, what would I cook? What is the easiest to cook? Now, this is the other thing. A lot of the things that my mother used to cook, they involved a lot of work. She would go in the kitchen and constantly having to mind the stove, stir things up, you know, it was ingredients, spices, recipes, cookbooks, and all this stuff. And I couldn't understand why anybody would go through all that trouble. So to me, it was a lot easier to just get some meat, put it on the stove, put it in a pan, put it on the grill or whatever, and cook it up. You don't have to put anything on it, maybe a little salt now and then. And it tasted good. But my mom would say, well, you have to do this and that. It's like butter. They always had to spread the butter on bread. My mom would complain, well, the butter's too hard. It's hard to spread. I said, well, why don't you just eat the butter and give the bread to the ducks? And I went through that all the time. She says, I don't want to hear about those ducks anymore. It's always you and those ducks. You know, you should start a duck farm. You love your ducks so much. I said, Mom, it's not that I love the ducks. I think they're interesting and everybody else hates them. But I love them. Oh, they're messy and they poop everywhere and they dig holes. Yeah, but they're kind of cute, you know, especially little ducklings.
Right.
But really what it came down to is when I was stuck at the house and I had to do most of my own cooking, that's when the real transition happened. And from that point on, it just seemed like natural to me. When I did go back to school and start high school a few weeks late, then I was faced with the problem of what to eat for lunch. Because usually I was given a sandwich. A lot of times my parents would give me a bologna sandwich or a ham sandwich or maybe a can of tuna or something like that. Now, normally I would eat the can of tuna and any of the sandwiches, I'd take the meat and cheese out of it and then I'd put the bread in my pocket. And then when I got out to school, I'd go and find the canal and give it to the ducks. Nice. So they could over there, they could have lunch too. But then, of course, my mom figured that out and said, well, you're not eating all your food. I don't like it. That's why I'm not eating it. Well, I don't care anymore. You make whatever you want. That's your problem. I said, okay. So I started making my own beef stew with ground beef, and I'd put it into, we had these plastic Tupperware containers. There, I remember there was one that was yellow, red, and blue, and I think there was a white one. They had this little ridged lid on it, and you snap it together. Mm-hmm. And I'd cook this up, and I'd put it in these containers and put it in the refrigerator. Then when it was time to go to lunch in school, I'd simply pull out that plastic container and then just eat it cold. And everyone would look at me like, "Ugh, yeah, eating cold food, whatever." I'm like, no problem. And there used to be a chili that they had at Winn-Dixie. I think it was called Sure Fine Chili, and it was nothing but ground beef. It was, I think what it was some kind of taco filler. And once in a while, I'd use that. I don't remember if it had any other ingredients, but I remember just on the label, it was like beef, water, salt, I think onions and garlic, some other thing, you know. They didn't even have MSG, because I know that the ravioli cans, they had MSG, but this stuff didn't, and I'd eat that. But most of the time, I'd make my own. I'd take it with me to school. Then when I came home and my mother made dinner, you know, I'd get grief because, well, what do you want today? Steak, hamburger, or chicken? Like, I don't know. You could surprise me. Give me some seafood. How about shrimp or fish? Well, you don't eat anything, you know. Oh, I made this bread. Do you want a piece of it? Not really. Right. Well, at least try it. Okay, I'll try it. I'd try it. Yeah, it's not bad. You want more? Yeah, my ducks are hungry. I'd get mad. They get mad at me all the time. Well, eventually my parents gave up and they said, you know what, let him eat whatever he wants to eat. And the thing is that over time, it actually worked out very well because I started to grow and I grew a lot. But that was a surprise to me. It was a surprise to them. And actually, I think after the first few months, my mom didn't bother me anymore because it was less work for her. She didn't have to worry about making any food for me. And my dad thought it was kind of nice that I was independent somewhat. So, yeah, I mean, it eventually, it was a little bit of a rocky start. But after the first year, it just became natural. And since then, I pretty much followed it without thinking about it.
Nice. I love that. That sounds very simple to follow and a lot less stress. And the bonus, the ducks get food. So,
yeah, that's right.
That's awesome. So in terms of your health and wellness over the last 3, 4, or 5 decades, how has your health been?
Well, my health has been pretty good. I do have a few problems. I mean, you'll notice sometimes my nose gets stuffy, and that's because when I was a kid, I had a few accidents. I didn't break my nose, but it got messed up. I had a lot of sinus infections when I was younger. So that's why sometimes my voice may be a little nasally, and I'm pretty sensitive. Plus, I live in a house that's full of mold and mildew. It's old, you know, the roof leaked and I had to fix that. And I do a lot of clean out jobs, and there's some really horribly disgusting places I've had to deal with. You know, I mean, it's like you see on the internet where somebody has a million cigarette butts in their house. I've had to deal with places like that, dead rodents, dead animals, and all that. So that's one thing I've had to deal with. The other thing, when I was younger, I did get a lot of sore throats. I know I had strep throat and a few things like that. And I also had, when I went on the vegetarian diet for a while, I was having trouble breathing at night, which was kind of weird. It didn't happen all the time, but if I did catch a cold, I'd wake up like 3 or 4 in the morning, unable to breathe and have to sit up and kind of, you know, struggle with that. But other than that, really, I haven't had any health issues, especially since, you know, the last 30 years straight that I've been on the carnivore diet. I mean, I've been in a few car accidents, but I don't have any aches or pains. You know, I've had a few work-related bumps and bruises. I fell through a roof again, but I didn't break anything. I've fallen downstairs, it collapsed. You know, these things have happened, but my health, I think, has been pretty good. I haven't been to a doctor since 1996, so I don't know if I'm ready to die tomorrow. I mean, I may drop dead of a heart attack while I'm doing this interview. So anything's possible. But I think compared to everybody else I know my age, who's, you know, 55, I seem to be doing really well. Every one of the people I know are at least one medication. I'm not on any medication. And I feel really good. I don't get upset. You know, I've had so many, like in the last month, I've had problems. My truck broke down. I've had issues, things breaking down around the house. I've had no work. And I've been doing the best I can, but I seem to manage through it. And again, I've had several different careers. Mm-hmm. One of the first things I did after college, I actually was working in hurricane cleanup after Hurricane Andrew. Then I started a business in IT. We were setting up networks for about 5 years, servers and stuff like that. And then I got involved with a friend in a business that did security cameras and DVRs and products like that. I've also taught at Miami-Dade College. I taught electronics. I taught computer repair, and I also taught some technical math. I did some substituting as well. I actually substituted at the public schools at times when I didn't have any other work. That in itself was quite interesting. There's some interesting stories about that. I actually met another kid when I was substituting in high school, and he was into bodybuilding or whatever, and he had noticed that I was eating my lunch and it was nothing but meat. He says, "Oh, you're on," I forget the name of the person he was talking about, diet. And I said, "Yo, I only eat pretty much really meat. You know, I eat meat, eggs, cheese, some yogurt. I don't eat vegetables and I almost never eat fruit." But that's about the only time anyone's ever seen that. But in terms of health issues, again, everybody I know at this point has had at least one chronic health issue. It seems like the most common one seems to be having trouble sleeping. A lot of people I know, they have to take things for sleeping, and depression, that seems to be another one. They get anxiety. And you can see when you're dealing with people and they get in a stressful situation, they start to break down, they start to lose it. And I get accused of being a robot because I don't really lose it until I absolutely have to. But
right.
I've seen this over and over again, and I have a feeling that that may also be diet related. But otherwise, the only health issues I deal with now is the occasional allergy. You know, sometimes I'll get the sniffles in my nose, and once in a while, I may feel tired if I'm catching a cold or flu. If I catch a cold or flu, it's usually a day of intense sneezing, runny nose, and maybe a headache. And then after a couple of days, it goes away. And that's pretty much been the extent of my health issues.
Wow. That's quite the testament to eating animal-based. Most people are in a much worse position than that. You know, many different ailments, like you had mentioned, not just physical, but also mental issues, autoimmune conditions and things like that. I mean, there's so many issues that people have, especially, you know, at 55. I mean, you said most people are on one medication. I would say that they're probably on more than that, you know, on average, it seems anyway. So yeah, that's awesome. So what does a typical day look like for you? We know that a day, at least I know that your day involves ducks in some way, shape, or form. But in terms of what you eat, what does your day look like?
My days are pretty consistent. It all depends on what I have available in the freezer or the refrigerator. A lot of times my diet is determined by what's on sale or what I can catch. Now, a treat for me would be able to catch something nice and delicious. For example, a large iguana. Once in a while, I get my hands on one of those and I'll have a delicious deep fried iguana. Usually I'll have that for lunch or dinner. A duck. The problem with the ducks is that my ducks are almost like pets. So it's pretty rare that I'm going to cook one of them, but I do eat their eggs whenever I can find them to keep the population down. Mm-hmm. Lately, I've been letting them sit on more eggs because we don't have as many ducks as we did. But the first thing I do when I get up, usually I wake up between 7 and 8 o'clock, depending on when I went to sleep. The first thing I do, I'll put on some clothes and I'll go outside. And if I can see the sun come up, that's great. And I'll go out there and I'll talk to the ducks. I'll pick up a few branches or leaves or whatever, maybe sweep around the house, maybe, you know, clean up. There might be some oil or grease that's spilled or who knows what, try to maybe wash the duck poop because there's a lot of duck poop on the walkway. So I'll go out there and do that. And then what I'll do, I'll start my breakfast, which is usually 6 eggs and a piece of meat. So what I do, I just take the eggs and scramble them up and I get some lard or butter and I put it in the cast iron pan and turn it on until it melts, turn down the heat, throw the scrambled eggs in there and just let them cook. And I'll go outside, do a few more things. Normally, I can smell when the eggs are ready because there's a vent in the kitchen and it goes right to the front yard or the backyard. And usually, I have a good sense of timing. I can generally, my internal clock works really well. I can judge time very accurately. So I don't think I've ever burned my breakfast in the last 30 years. that I've been making this breakfast. Yeah, I never do, but it's all cooked on low heat. There's nothing really intense. And the meat, typically it's going to be beef or pork. It may be maybe seafood if I have it, and I'll just put that into another pan. I'll usually either cook that with water or cook it on lard and let that cook up. And usually by the time 10, 15 minutes, I come inside, I'll go ahead and flip the meat. I'll look at the eggs are done. I'll go ahead, turn the heat off on the pan, flip the eggs over and just let them stay on the pan so they stay warm. And then I'll go out, do a few more things, come inside, eat my breakfast, and I'll have my meat and eggs. I'll have a piece of cheese, or I'll have some homemade yogurt to go with it. And then depending on the day, if I'm going to go to work, I'll make sure I have all my tools and supplies, and I'll get my truck running, which at the time, I guess from now on, it'll probably be the van. But I'll get that and I'll go and go off and try to do whatever work I need to do. Now, if I'm doing a clean out job, it's going to be more like just taking things out of there and loading it up. Generally around lunchtime, which can be anywhere from 12 to 2 o'clock, I'm going to go ahead and leave the job site and I'm going to come back to my house. I try to make sure that my jobs are not too far away, but if they are far away, what I'll do, I'll make sure that I pack a lunch. And usually my lunch is either going to be some kind of meat or it's going to be a meat stew in one of my metal containers. And I'll put that inside the truck. Mm-hmm. Now, I do carry a grill with me. I have one of those little propane grills. And I also have a charcoal grill that I can use. Normally, I don't use a charcoal grill when I'm working because people get kind of panicky when I light up a fire and they see sparks and flames coming out. They might think that my truck's on fire. So what I'll typically do, I'll use the gas grill. It's one of those portable grills, and it just has a little bottle you screw in, and you light it up, and you can put your meat on there. The other option is to cook on the engine. And if I've been driving around a lot, if I know that I'm going to have lunch, I'll go ahead and I'll wrap the meat in either foil, or I'll put it in the metal container. I'll put it in with some fat or some, you know, a stew, and just put it on the engine and let it heat up. So if I'm eating my stew, I'll just let it sit on the engine. But there's enough residual heat in there. And by the time the lunch comes, lunch will be the perfect temperature. Sometimes I may have to start the engine. Yeah, I may have to start the engine and run it for a while to get it up to the right temperature. But, you know, by that point, even if I have to eat it cold, sometimes if I'm on the run, let's say that I don't have time to eat lunch, I'll eat it cold. So I'll just take out my container. And I, like I said, I use these metal, they're either stainless steel or enamel coated containers. And they have a lid on top of it, a little plastic lid. I'll take the lid off. I'll take one of my metal spoons and just start scooping it up and just eat it right on the road. So I got that down pretty good. And everybody that works with me knows that you have to give me a lunch, because if I don't eat my lunch, I'm going to be a very difficult person to deal with. You know, especially if I have to deal with them and their disgusting duck food, nasty pizza and sandwiches and that disgusting Chick-fil-A, that the smell of that place makes me feel like throwing up. You know, it's got that fast food smell, and they'll bring those sandwiches and this goofy looking sauce that looks like, it looks like axle grease, basically. It's like something I said, oh, is that for my bearings? Oh, no, that's Chick-fil-A sauce. And then, of course, you have, I mean, okay, if they go to Wendy's, that doesn't bother me. I actually kind of like Wendy's. And I mean, Burger King, yeah, the burgers are skinny, but at least burgers smell good, you know? Mm-hmm. It's not like chicken nuggets, McNuggets. It looks like McTurds with breading on it. I mean, seriously, how could anyone eat that disgusting? It has that vegetable oil smell.
True.
So, you know, I'll have my lunch. And again, my lunch has a nice beefy smell to it. I mean, 99% of the time I'm going to have beef for lunch. Once in a while, I'll have heart attack chicken, but usually heart attack chicken's more of a dinner item. But, you know, I love to have something with beef for lunch. And then I'll go back to work and I'll work until maybe 5, 6, 7 o'clock, whatever it takes to get the job done. When I'm done, I load up my tools and supplies and I go back to the house. And what I'm going to do, I got to figure out what's for dinner. So I'll open up the refrigerator, see what kind of meat I have in there. If it's in the refrigerator, that means it's not going to be there much longer because I don't want anything to go bad. If there's chicken in there, I'll eat chicken. If there's pork, I'll eat pork. If there's beef, I'll eat beef. Whatever is in the refrigerator is going to get eaten. If there's nothing in the refrigerator, I'll look in the freezer. Then I can make a decision. Is there Is there a ground beef in the freezer? Is there some steaks in the freezer? Is there chicken in the freezer? Is there a duck in the freezer? Is there an iguana in the freezer? Whatever there happens to be. And then once I decide what I'm going to eat, I decide how I'm going to cook it. Generally, beef or any ruminant meat is going to either be grilled or stewed. That you don't fry ruminant meats. And then when it comes to poultry and reptiles, those are either going to be stewed in water or they're going to be deep fried in beef tallow or lard, depending on what I have. So then let's say that I'm going to have some kind of steak. The steak is frozen. The first thing I'm going to do, I'm going to put the steak in basically a steamer, and I'm going to turn on the steamer, go and take my shower or bath. And then by the time I get out, it's going to be steamed up and ready to go. Then what I'll do, I'll put it on the cast iron skillet, or I'll put it on the grill and then cook it up, and that'll be my steak. If it's going to be ground beef, I'll throw the ground beef with some water into the pot, turn it on, let it cook while I'm in the bathroom, you know, cleaning up. By the time I get out, then I'll take a potato masher and mash up the ground beef to spread it out, stir it around, and then when it reaches the right temperature, I'll go ahead and eat that. If it's chicken, if the chicken's frozen, I'll steam that first, but then I'll have the lard or the tallow heating up on the stove. So by the time I get out of my bath, it's liquid and ready to go. Then I'll put the chicken in there and cook it up. If it's an iguana, I'll do the same thing. And by the time that I've taken my bath, you know, dinner's almost half cooked. And then it's just a matter of doing a few things around the house, putting tools away, doing whatever needs to be done. By the time I'm done with that, then I'm ready to eat. So the food is ready to go. And again, I cook by time and by smell. If the food smells good, then I know that it's ready. If it smells like it's burnt, then I know it's going to the ducks and I have to start all over again. Thankfully, it's very rare that I burn any food. But that's pretty much how my day goes.
That's awesome. Hey, just hearing you talk about all that stuff is making me hungry. So
yeah, you got good taste. That's what it is.
Right. So let's switch gears for a second. So from a medical perspective, and I think I know the answer to this, but I want to ask just in case. So have you ever consulted with a healthcare professional about your diet, and have, you know, did they share with you what they thought?
Yes, I did. But that was back in 1996. I had a doctor at the time. I had a health plan because in my business, we made sure that everybody had health insurance. And in order to have the health plan for the business, I had to be in it as well. It's a long story, but that's what had to happen. And in order to keep the health plan, I had to go for a checkup at least once a year, preferably twice a year, was the way they had it set up. So I went in there and I had gotten checked up before. 95, I think I went twice. And then in 96, I went earlier in the year. And then by the summertime, I had gone back. Now, what had happened is that I switched the doctor. The doctor that I had, I guess, had retired. He was an older man. He had to be over 70. I mean, he was way beyond the retirement age. And then we got this younger guy that was probably 40 something, but he was obese. And he looked at my blood test and he said that my cholesterol was way too high and that I was at risk for a heart attack. So I remember, I think I told him, I said, good, that's what I'm looking for. And he was in shock. What do you mean? I said, I'm on a heart attack diet. I eat the worst possible food so that way I can have a heart attack and die before I get old and end up in a nursing home. And this guy was like horrified. So he's telling me, well, you know, your risk for heart disease and cancer and stroke are very, very high. Your cholesterol level is too high and your blood sugar is kind of low and all these things. And I forget, says you could have a condition where your blood sugar is too low and you could get into I don't know if it was a coma or what it was. It is like all these things to try to scare me. It says, you shouldn't eat that much meat. It's bad for you. You need to eat some healthy whole grains and fruits and vegetables. I'm like, no, I'm not going to. And then, so I think what I told him was, look, if my diet is so bad, why are you obese and I'm not? And that's when he just lost it. I'm not obese. I'm healthy. My cholesterol is low. And I mean, this guy, he started getting mad at me. And I started laughing. You know, I thought it was really funny. So he's like raising his fist to me and I don't want to see you anymore. And he's losing his temper. And I mean, it was like really funny. I said, you know what? I'm never coming back to this. I'm never coming back to the doctor again. I have no reason to come here. And I basically got thrown out of the, you know, that doctor and the health plan. I told them, I said, look, I don't want to go through this again. Oh, we're sorry. We're sorry. We'll get you another doctor. Well, what eventually happened is I settled with them. I told them I didn't want the health plan anymore, but they still covered the employees and everybody else in the company. So that was kind of my out. So I got out of the health plan and I hadn't been in a health plan since. You know, I did join the second company, the health plan, but I never went to the doctor. So I'm one of those people that probably doesn't have any medical records. I mean, I already have no dental records because I haven't been to a dentist since 1986. So wow. I'm like an oddball, I think, in this world.
So how's your dental health?
Yeah, my teeth are all crooked and broken because that's the way I was when I was a kid. My teeth grew in too crowded on the bottom. I got this one broken in a fight when I was in junior high. But other than that, I haven't had a cavity. I mean, if I did have a cavity by now, my tooth should have fallen out.
Right.
I mean, I had cavities when I was a kid. I have a couple of old mercury fillings in there. But no, I mean, my teeth don't hurt. I don't have bleeding gums like a lot of people I know. They have to use those really soft toothbrushes. I use what's called a smoker's toothbrush. It's the only one that can get the meat particles out of my teeth. I love to eat. I eat steak. I love chewy steak, the cheap top round, or I forget what's the other cut. There's a couple of those cuts that are very cheap. I love to chew on that. To me, that's like a candy bar. I see people chewing on a candy bar. I like to chew on my steak. But you get like these little fibers of meat that get stuck in your teeth. And you could use floss, but if you try to floss, it pushes them in deeper and it makes it harder to get out. So I like to use a really strong toothbrush and just go down and push it out. And I've had people tell me, well, you can't use that toothbrush every day because it'll make your gums bleed. Well, guess what? I use that toothbrush every time I brush my teeth, and I've never had bleeding gums. I don't think I have any plaque on my teeth. I mean, they don't feel dirty.
Right.
Although a lot of people, they have to get their teeth whitened, and they have all these deep cleanings. I've never had any of those cleanings. As far as I know, my teeth are healthy. And the way that I chew on a steak, if you've ever seen me chew on a tough cut of meat, I'm like a cat, you know, or chomping away on this thing, ripping out pieces of meat. And I chew on ice constantly. When I drink water, I like cold water. And my parents used to tell me, if you chew on ice, it'll crack your teeth. Well, my teeth never cracked. So I guess dental health, although my teeth look bad, I think my teeth are good. When I was younger, they were trying to pressure me into getting braces, but I would have had to have teeth pulled out. And I said, no, I don't want to get any teeth pulled out. I'd rather have crooked teeth. You know, what do I care what my teeth are crooked? It doesn't matter.
Right. Right. Yeah. I'd say your teeth are in perfect health, especially if you don't have any cavities. I mean, that's incredible. I mean, there's kids, you know, 6, 7, 8 years old that have cavities. So yeah, that's a tremendous testimony to eating animal-based.
And you know, both of my parents had a lot of trouble with their teeth. My mom had a lot of work done to her teeth. My dad had teeth that had rotted. So tooth problems is pretty common in my family. So I think this is kind of an accomplishment.
Yeah, absolutely. So since you've ate an animal-based diet, carnivore diet for over 40 years, I'm sure that you've heard some common misconceptions about eating this way over the years. You care to address some of those?
Well, yes. One thing I've heard a lot of is that if you don't have vitamin C, you're going to get scurvy and your bones are going to get weak and you're going to have all these problems. You're going to catch a cold all the time because you're not getting enough vitamins from plants. You're going to have skin problems because you're going to get acne and you're going to get all these other rashes and stuff like that because you're eating so much fat. Your high cholesterol is going to give you a heart attack. You're going to have a stroke. You're going to get cancer. I mean, I've heard so many different things that people have told me, and so far it hasn't been true. So I don't know where they get these ideas from, but I guess it's just from the medical establishment. Maybe they're pushing a narrative, but I've heard a lot of things. And I've had people even recently tell me that I need to change my diet now before it's too late, or I'm going to have a problem. And this friend of mine that kept telling me that, you know, he was overweight. He had a heart attack in his 40s. So he's very afraid that I'm going to get a heart attack because of the way that I eat. Now, he likes to eat barbecue, but on the other hand, he drank a lot of soda and ate a lot of sandwiches. So I try to explain to him there's a difference. But I've heard a lot of very interesting ideas, and I think a lot of them are myths because, I don't know, people just, they've been told this and they believe it, and I don't think any evidence will convince them otherwise.
Right. Yeah, so true. So, yeah, but I think one of the biggest ones, obviously, is that you're going to have a heart attack, and anybody is going to have had a heart attack would have been Rick.
That's right. That's right. I've been on the heart attack diet for decades, and you know, people get mad at me when I say I'm going to have a heart attack. Like, don't say that. That's terrible. I said, no, I'm having heart attack chicken, heart attack burgers. You know, I'm going to have a heart attack. So I use the word heart attack as a joke. That and the fact that when I grew up, we had a TV show called Sanford and Son, and old Fred Sanford was always having the big one every time that he was under a stressful situation. So yeah, if anybody was going to have a heart attack, it should have been me.
Absolutely. Yeah. Especially with your recipes, you know, heart attack chicken. And you literally name all your recipes heart attack something.
That's right. See, the way I figure it is when somebody tries to go against what you believe, just go ahead and say the worst from the beginning. You know, they say you're going to have a heart attack. So you just call your food heart attack this, heart attack that. Or, well, except for the pizza. I call that a pacemaker pizza because that pizza is going to make sure that you have a pacemaker when you get older, because right. It is completely free of flour. It is free of anything plant-based. It's all meat. And I haven't made a video on it, but I will soon. And it's very, very tasty. It's like the heart attack burger. Once you've had a heart attack burger, you don't want a regular burger. I mean, regular burger has stupid bread buns. Heart attack burger has pork rind bun. Those are good because unlike bread, which is basically just a sponge, this has a nice texture, a delicious taste, and it's higher calorie. I mean, how many calories is in a pork rind bun versus a regular white bun? It's probably 3 or 4 times as much. Mm-hmm. So by the time you eat that heart attack burger, you got over 10,000 calories, and you can really go after these people that talk about calories in, calories out. They try to educate you on the laws of thermodynamics when they don't even understand it themselves. So my idea was just play up the most unhealthy part of the diet and then make a joke out of it. So while you're doing it and people are trying to make you feel bad and feel guilty and scared, you're just laughing all the way to the grave.
Yeah, absolutely. I love that. So in terms of like long-term impact on your life, how has eating this way impacted your life? You know, has it been a net positive or negative? Do you see any drawbacks to it at all?
The only drawback to it is that it makes it a little more difficult when you have friends, and especially when they're married and they have kids and their wife wants to show off their cooking prowess. And then you go over there and they say, well, you know, everybody's going to like it except for Rick. He doesn't like anything. Just fire up the grill and he's happy. So a lot of times when we have a friendly get together, I get put out by the grill because not only am I known for eating meat, but I'm also known for being an excellent cook of steaks and burgers and so on. So, you know, it takes a little getting used to. If you're one of those people that likes to eat together, you're not going to be able to eat the same thing that everybody else does. But once you're all at the table, you know what? It's actually kind of nice because the people that like you for who you are going to like you no matter what you eat. That's what I try to tell them. It doesn't matter what I eat. What I do in my own life is not going to affect the way that I relate to other people. Now, some people might see me as being a bit of a hermit because I live by myself. I have the only house in the neighborhood that's surrounded by trees and bushes. You can't even see it from the street. And I like a lot of things that other people don't like. But on the other hand, I've attracted a group of friends. Some of them I've known for 40 years or more, really like being around me because of two main reasons. One, I have a lot of knowledge and a lot of different things. So when they run into a problem, the first person they call is going to be me. And the second thing is I have a relatively stable emotional state. I don't get as upset as a lot of other people do. Many people, when things are going wrong, they'll blow up. Like For example, when my truck broke down and wouldn't start, and I had about 40 pounds of meat sitting in the truck ready to go bad, a lot of people would panic. But what I did, I just stuffed it in a box and started walking home with it. And eventually I got home and nothing went bad. So I have more of a can-do attitude. And instead of getting upset about things when they go wrong, I look for a way to either solve the problem or work around it. So this lifestyle, and I don't think of it just as a diet, it's a lifestyle. It's going to change your life, because once you become aligned with it, it changes your view on the whole world. And I think in many ways, it's a net positive, because you realize that a lot of the problems you have come from either yourself because of bad decisions or what other people have done. And the trick to avoiding these problems is to see the signs a long time before they come. You know, if you're going down a road and there's a fog cloud in front of you, you're not going to go 70 miles an hour down that road. You're going to start slowing down, and you may even go off the road and maybe go on a side road and wait it out until the fog goes away. So If you're running into problems in your life, you're not going to double down and do the same thing that got you into those problems. So in my case, if something is not working, I'm going to go and find something else rather than trying to do it over and over again and hope that I get a different result. Now, I have tried other ways of eating, but they didn't work for me. So I always go back to the, as you put it, animal-based or carnivore lifestyle. I have friends that are vegans and vegetarians. I even know people, like one of my former vegan friends is going on a keto-based, meat-based diet. He's eating 50% meat and 50% other foods, which include eggs, some dairy, and some plant foods. And it works for him. So it's like I told him, if it's working for you, stay with it. If it stops working for you, then you may have to make some changes. So again, my theory is find what works for you. And if something isn't working for you, you're going to have to make some changes. But if you do that, that seems to be a much better path to success than just going overboard and listening to whatever guru or expert has ideas for you. And this is a big problem, especially with my vegan friends. There's a few of these vegan YouTubers that keep talking about how healthy it is to be vegan and how good they look at age 50 and, oh, I'm doing so great and I'm in good shape and all this. Like, yeah, that may work for them, but is it going to work for you? You know, you look in the mirror and see what you look like. You see how you feel. Do you feel like that? No. And that's why my friend decided that he's going to try the carnivore diet. Although I told him, don't go into the full carnivore diet yet. Try the animal-based keto diet first. And if that works for you, stay with it. If you want to go carnivore after that, do it. Because if you go from a vegan diet to a carnivore diet, your experience is going to be extremely bad. I can't imagine anyone being able to switch from eating a steady diet of plant toxins to eating meat and not having some major issues.
Yeah, that's what I did. Yeah, it was pretty brutal in the laboratory for sure. And I had a lot of oxalate dumping because I was eating so much spinach prior to going carnivore, and the oxalate dumping was just incredible.
Wow.
Yeah. So that was, I definitely would not recommend, like you said, jumping straight from one to the other.
Mm-hmm.
Give yourself a little bit of a transition period in between.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's important, because a shock to the system is not a good thing. I mean, you know, yeah, eventually you want to transition, but if you put a shock to the system, that could be the breaking point. You know, it's like you have an old piece of machinery, you're not going to run it all out because it's probably going to blow up. You're going to slow down, you're going to take it apart and see what you can do to make it better. And I think a lot of times people, they go from one extreme to the other. And the other thing I've noticed is that as my friends have gotten older, every one of them seems to struggle with weight. They always tend to gain weight in the worst possible places. So they're always looking for some quick fix, you know, like when they have a high school reunion coming. I never went to the high school reunion because I hated high school. Well, I didn't hate it, but I had a total of like four or five friends that I kept in contact with. What do I care about all these other people, you know?
Right.
And if I was going to go to a high school reunion, I wanted it to be at the school, but it's always at some stupid hotel and they charge you a bunch of money. And I mean, for what? So you can go and talk about time that's long past. I don't understand that.
Right.
But everyone I know from that time period, they always seem to get fat and they always have all these issues. And I said, well, it's just part of getting old. I said, well, you know, you get old. Yeah, things change. But it's like I was saying about machinery. The machinery may be old, but you may see a machine that's been running since the 1800s, and it still works because it's constantly getting maintained. Parts are being changed. Things are being done. And it's your body's kind of the same way. You're not going to perform the same as when you were 20 years old, but you could still perform at a good level at 50. I mean, I'm pretty much living proof. I can outwork a lot of 20-somethings that I work with. They complain about back trouble and their foot hurts. And they have this problem and that problem, and I don't feel good and blah, blah, blah. And I said, oh, it's just an excuse. They're doing it so they don't have to work. But I found out recently that I think a lot of them are actually having these problems. Mm-hmm. It's just, to me, someone who's 25 years old, who looks in really good shape, a nice physique and all that, is complaining about aches and pains. I thought it was just an excuse, but I think it's actually true because I've seen a lot of people, they seem to be really suffering. And it's like, wait a minute, well, how come a 55-year-old can work without any aches or pains? Well, it's because I don't push myself too hard. I do what I can. I don't rush into anything. And I try to keep myself well-fed. And I think that when you get to the point where you've lived long enough and you see what works and what doesn't, it really is important to have the right combination. And if it works for you to have a mixed diet of animal-based and plant-based, that's great. If you have to go completely carnivore, that's great too. And if you're one of the very few people who can live on a vegan diet, you know what? I applaud you and I say 100% keep doing what you're doing. The only thing that I've noticed that does seem to be in common with all of them is that it has to be a whole foods, not ultra processed diet. You can be minimally processed, but if it's whole foods and you know, the more natural you can get your food source from, the better. I think that's the key. And believe me, that's one thing that I agree with the vegans and a lot of the other people on. You know, we need to get away from the factory farm processed food model. And that's what I want to do. That's one of my goals the rest of my life is to be able to get a meat source that I can control myself and I don't have to go into the processed food system to get my food.
Yeah, that's awesome. I definitely am looking forward to being in that position myself one day too, for sure. So that's a good transition point here. When you're talking about the different types of diets. So what advice would you give to someone that is considering a carnivore diet or carnivore lifestyle?
Well, first of all, you need to figure out why you're going to do this. Are you going to do it because it's the latest trend and you want to join in the group? Or do you want to do it because you really want to make improvements to yourself? Are you willing to give up the duck food to eat real food? You know, are you going to be one of those people that forces yourself to eat a carnivore diet like it's some kind of torture? And then every now and then you're going to go on a binge and eat a bunch of crap because you think that that's a treat. Or are you trying to go on a diet because you want to improve yourself physically, mentally, and you want to improve the earth as a whole? And that's the most important thing. If you're in this 100% wholehearted, your success is guaranteed. If you're trying to game the system, trying to play games, trying to act like you're doing the right thing, but secretly do the wrong thing, you're going to fail. There's no way around it. It's just not possible. So for many people, you need to understand the reasoning, or as you know, your friend Carrie always says, what's the why? Why do you do that? Once you get past that point, then you can deal with the how. You know, how am I going to do this? Do I have a family that eats duck food? Do I have friends that eat what they shouldn't? Is it going to affect my relationship with them? And if it does affect my relationship with them, are these people that I really want to associate with? Do I need to maybe change my association, change my lifestyle? Am I going to be a positive influence on others, or am I going to drag other people down? Is my carnivore diet going to be something that is just a constant source of contention? That, well, I can't do this and I can't do that, and no, I'm not allowed to do this or whatever. In my case, I tell everyone I can eat whatever I want, but there's a lot of things I just don't want to eat. You know, would you want to eat something that was covered in maggots that was in the garbage can? Well, of course not. So when you offer me that box of donuts, what I see is a bunch of food with maggots on it that just came from the garbage can. I don't want to eat that. It's nasty. Oh, but that you're insulting. I'm not insulting you. I'm just saying this is how I feel. Now, you may see me chewing on a big, juicy steak and you go, oh, that's disgusting. It's like my mom would say, well, you look like a cat chewing on that piece of meat. Well, I enjoy it. I enjoy the delicious steak. You know, there is no dessert. There's no cake. There's no donuts. There's no cookies. There's no ice cream that can give me as much satisfaction as a very tasty piece of meat. You know, you give me a T-bone steak and already I'm salivating and I feel like I get this really, I don't know how to describe the feeling, but it's like a euphoric feeling. Now, I've never been on drugs or anything like that. I've never been high. And I know a lot of people that they like cannabis because it gets them high. I get the same. It seems like I get the same feeling they do from smoking cannabis by having a delicious steak. When I have a steak, you see me eating a steak, I start to feel that really good feeling. Mm-hmm. And the feeling lasts. This is the thing. You know, the pot smokers, they'll smoke a joint and they'll feel okay for a little while. Then after about 20, 30 minutes, they got to smoke another joint. I eat a 2-pound steak and I'm going to feel really good for hours. So if I had, let's say I had a steak for lunch at 12 o'clock, I'm going to feel good all the way to 6 o'clock when I have another meal. So it's like, you know, it's something I like to do. So if you want to start the diet and you want to succeed on the diet, you have to be either convinced or you have to experience the pleasure and the enjoyment that goes with it. And when you feel that enjoyment, you don't want to do anything else. You're not going to be tempted. You could be surrounded by every fast food restaurant in town, just like me. I could eat with anyone. I've had to eat with workers many times, either at McDiarrhea, you know, Burger King, Arby's, whatever, any place, even Chick-fil-A. Now, I have to admit, I've been in the Chick-fil-A. I really like the people that work there. It has a really nice, friendly atmosphere. That is the one fast food place, I think, where people are the happiest. Because you go in there and the food smells terrible and I feel like sick. You know, I like the people that are there, that work there. Oh, how are you? Hi. Is there anything I can get for you? No, I don't like any of the food, you know. And I ask him, do you have any chicken cooked in lard or tallow? Oh, no, we use oil. Like, I don't like oil. It doesn't agree with me. Okay, fine. I'll sit there and I'll watch, you know, people I work with or friends eat there. But it's just that to me, food is food and everything else is duck food. And when you get to that point, there's no going back. I mean, there's no way that I could ever stop this diet. If I ran out of meat, let's say that they banned meat altogether, I'd be a very unhappy person. I wouldn't be able to eat the junk food. You know what I'd have to do? I'd have to go outside and eat fruits and maybe some vegetables if I had to, but I could never go to the junk food. It's just not something that I want. I couldn't eat the bread. I mean, even if I was starving, I'd probably starve to death. I'd probably go outside and eat a bunch of leaves because it's just those processed foods do not appeal to me. Mm-hmm. So again, if you're looking to succeed on the carnivore diet, you have to make it your own. Make the lifestyle your own. And then there's no way that you're ever going to, as they say, fall off the wagon.
Yeah, I love that. So since you ate essentially a carnivore diet for, you know, over 4 decades, do you feel like the attitude towards things like the carnivore diet is changing at all in society?
Very much so. Very much so. And you'll notice that I've spent a lot of time on YouTube, which I never used to do. You know, YouTube for me was sort of a hobby, put some of my videos in there, but I try to view as many of these videos as I can. I'll comment on them. This is definitely a lot different than when I was on the diet. I mean, for many years, especially in the 1990s, when I was pressured to try plant-based, I was just the outlier. I was the one that everyone was just criticizing. Oh, that Rick, you know, all he does is eat meat. He's going to kill himself. Oh, it's terrible. You know, he's not healthy. He doesn't look healthy. Oh, he's so skinny. You know, even my own parents would say, oh, you're too skinny. I have people now that make comments, so you don't look healthy. Like, what am I supposed to look like? I'm 55 years old, you know? I'm old. But as you can see, my hair is all dark colored. I don't really have any wrinkles, even though my face moves around a lot. You know, I'm not one of those people with Botox injecting themselves with toxic bacterial secretions. I don't look bad for someone that's 55. So again, I don't even pay attention to the stupid comments. It's probably just the trolls. Mm-hmm. But I think a lot of times people, they project their insecurities on others. And that seems to be one thing that I've noticed. So the diet is an upcoming trend, and I think it threatens a lot of the established ideas. So a lot of people that are not doing well on their diet, I think, are lashing out. They're taking it out on us. Maybe they've been on the standard diet. Maybe they've been on the low-fat diet. Maybe they've been on the vegan diet. And they're not getting the results that they want. It's just like my vegan friends. They'll take pot shots at me now and then, but when it comes right down to it, who is the person they come to when they have a problem, when their refrigerator's broken or their car's making a noise, or they need to get some good, fresh, whole foods like tropical fruits or tomatoes or vegetables? They come to me because they know that my garden is the best in the whole area. And no matter how much they pay at Whole Foods, they're not going to be able to get fruits and veggies that taste as good as what comes from here. But yes, this diet is definitely an up-and-coming trend, and I think it's going to be harder and harder for the establishment to shoot it down because the evidence just keeps coming. There's more and more of us sharing our experiences. There are people out there now doing research, and it's proving a lot of the things that I've experienced over my life that this is not actually the heart attack diet. Although to me, it will always be the heart attack diet. I will never change that because it's just part of the fun part of the diet. And remember, it's not work. It's fun. It's not a diet. It's a lifestyle. And once you get connected with this lifestyle, it becomes part of you. And I think that's when people understand that and they learn that this diet, this lifestyle is going to be growing and growing. And I think they're going to try to shoot it down. I think the more it grows, the more pressure they're going to put on us. But if we reach the critical mass, there will be no way to stop it. It's just going to keep on going because this diet has been around for thousands of years, probably longer than that, and it's not going anywhere.
I love that. Man, I feel like running through a brick wall now, Rick. Well, I appreciate that. Yeah, for sure. So where can everybody find you on the internet if they want to connect with you?
I'm not a social media person, but I am on YouTube. You can find me on YouTube. All you have to do is do a Google search for the 40-year carnivore, and you'll see all kinds of different interviews that I've done, and you'll see my channel. My channel is not about, I mean, it's called Charger Mopar because I'm a car guy. I love my old Mopars, although I do drive Fords. But the reason I drive Fords is because I consider them somewhat disposable. If I get destroyed by the bad Miami drivers, you know, it's not a big loss. If they wreck my Charger and I'm still sane and able to get around, they may end up, you know, more damaged than my car by the time I get through with them. So I'd rather save the car for special occasions and just drive around in a Ford truck or van. That way, at least I'm relatively safe. But yeah, you could find me on YouTube as Charger Mopar. I may do more social media in the future. I don't know, but I kind of find social media to be toxic. So I don't really spend much time in it. And this is not something, this is not a business or anything. This is just something I do, you know, as just for fun. So I don't spend a lot of time. But yeah, if they want to contact me, look at my YouTube profile. And I do have an email in my About Me section. So you can email me if you feel free to do that. Anyone that wants to do interviews or anyone that wants to learn more about my experience is free to contact me. I respond to every email. In fact, I respond to every comment that I see on my YouTube videos. So yeah, that's the best place to catch me.
That's awesome. Rick, you're a really, really good guy. And I definitely appreciate you sitting down and taking the time to share your story with me and my subscribers. I can't thank you enough. I really appreciate everything that you have done and are doing and will do in the future. And again, I'm just very appreciative and thankful for you.
Thank you. I'm very happy to help the carnivore community. And I appreciate that you're out there making the effort to contact a lot of us. I mean, you have you and you have Carrie and you have Dave Mack, and there's several people out there that are really picking this up. And I never thought I'd ever see this in my life. So keep doing it. You're going to connect us all together. And I think eventually, we'll reach critical mass and there'll be no shutting us down.
I love that. Can't wait. Thanks, Rick.
Anytime.
You've been listening to Carnivore Today. We're one of the most unique podcasts on the web as we explore not only the carnivore diet, but the misconceptions about it as well along the way. There are so many benefits from this extremely healthy and fulfilling diet. We hope you've enjoyed the show. If you did, make sure to like, rate, and review. And we'll be back soon. But in the meantime, find the website at carnivoretoday.com. Also find us on YouTube, Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter at Carnivore Today. See you next time.